Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Jaya Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayo Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Jaya Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
Vishnupada Paramahansa Parivaraj Kacharya Ashtotarashtra Shri Shimaresi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Nitai Gaur Premanande Hrivo Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotee. All glories to the assembled devotee. All glories to the assembled devotee. All glories to Shri Shri Guru Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, The Advent of Lord Krishna, Introduction, Text Number 67 and 68. Word meanings for Text 67, Mataram unto the mother, Pitaram unto the father, Pratin unto brothers, Sarvancha and anyone else, Suridaha, friends, Tata, as well as Ghananti, they kill, as it is practically seen. He, indeed, Asutripaha, those who envy the lives of others for their personal sense gratification. Lubdha, greedy, Rajanaha, such kings, Prayashaha, almost always, Bhuvi, on the earth. Mataram pitaram bratrin sarvangscha suridastata gananti yat su tripolubdha rajana prayasho bhuvi. Mataram pitaram bratrin sarvangscha suridastata gananti yasu tripolubdha rajana prayasho bhuvi. Mataram pitaram bratrin sarvangscha suridastata gananti yasu tripolubdha rajana prayasho bhuvi. Mataram pitaram bhratrin sarvangscha suridastata gananti yasu tripolubdha rajana prayasho bhuvi. Mataram pitaram bhratrin sarvangscha suridastata gnanti yasutrapo bhā rājana prāyaśo bhuvi. Ladies. Mataram Pitaram Bhatri Sarvam Surdastata Nandeya Sutra Polubha Rajana Prayasho Bhuvi. Translation: kings greedy for sense gratification on this earth almost always kill their enemies indiscriminately. To satisfy their own whims, they may kill anyone, even their mothers, fathers, brothers, or friends. Srila Prabhupada's purport. We have seen in the history of India that Aurangzeb killed his brother and nephews and imprisoned his father to fulfill political ambitions. There have been many similar instances, and Kamsa was the same type of king. Kamsa did not hesitate to kill his nephews and imprison his sister and his father. For demons to do such things is not astonishing. Nonetheless, although Kamsa was a demon, he was aware that Lord Vishnu cannot be killed, and thus he attained salvation. Even partial understanding of the activities of Lord Vishnu makes one eligible for salvation. Kamsa knew a little about Krishna, that he could not be killed, and therefore he attained salvation, although he thought of Vishnu, Krishna, as an enemy. What then is to be said of one who knows Krishna perfectly from the descriptions of shastras like Bhagavad Gita? It is therefore the duty of everyone to read Bhagavad Gita and understand Krishna perfectly. This will make one's life successful. Text 68. Atmanam iha sanjatam janan prag vishnuna hatam mahasuram kalanemin yadubi savyarudyata. In his previous birth, Kamsa had been a great demon named Kalanemi and been killed by Vishnu. Upon learning this information from Narada, Kamsa became envious of everyone connected with the Yadu dynasty. Purport: persons who are demons, enemies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are called asuras. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, the asuras, because of their enmity toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead, take birth after birth in asura families and therefore glide down to the darkest hellish regions. Om Jnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilita Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. We're talking about demons. We like to talk about demons. There's a verse in the, I believe it's the Vishnu Purana, or Dvabhuta Sargaloka Smin Daiva Asura Evacha Vishnu Bhaktir Smito Daiva Asuras Tadviparya. So this verse defines the two classes. Actually, the first two lines of this verse also appear in Bhagavad Gita. Dvabhuta Sargaloka Smin Daiva Asura Evacha. There are two kinds of persons in this world: the Daiva and the Asura. Of course, this word Daiva sounds like Deva. Deva means demigods, or it means God. Or Krishna is Deva Deva, the God of the gods. Deva, Daiva. So what is a Daiva? That's one class of persons, the Daiva. Vishnu Bhaktir Smrito Daiva. Those who are Vishnu Bhaktas, they are known to be Daiva. Or we say demigods. Vishnu Bhaktir Smrito Daiva Asuras Tadviparya. And the opposite to them, those who are against Lord Vishnu, they're called Asuras. So Kamsa, of course, he's in this category of Asura, which Prabhupada, of course, often translates as demons. So we're hearing here that Kamsa, even though he was a demon, he knew one thing, and that saved him. He knew that Lord Vishnu cannot be killed. So there are a few things that immediately I was thinking about when I was reading this. First, I've had this thought as we've been going through these different verses. There, Prabhupada keeps making references about how Kamsa knew about Vishnu, that Vishnu was coming to kill him. But in what we've read, there's been no mention of Lord Vishnu. The voice from the sky didn't say anything about Lord Vishnu. It just said the eighth child of Devaki will kill you. And I also wonder why is, well, if Kamsa knew that Vishnu couldn't kill him, or couldn't be killed, then why is he always trying to kill him? That's what he does. He sends one demon after another, trying to kill Krishna. So the only explanation seems to be because he's a demon and he doesn't think straight. Even though he may know, still he's thinking, I'm going to kill him. Or maybe sometimes he knows, but at other times he thinks, no, I'm going to keep trying anyway. So, of course, this is the demoniac mentality too. We repeatedly fail in our attempts to conquer Krishna or conquer Krishna in his form as the material energy, his representative. The material energy is working under his direction, as he says in the Bhagavad Gita. So we're always failing at that, and still we're trying to conquer it, trying to conquer over the material energy. So this, what we heard before, of course, we just heard that, as a story, just to review a little bit, Vasudeva promised his first child, so when his first child was born, then he brought that child to Kamsa. Then Kamsa said, oh, well, it's supposed to be the eighth child that's going to kill me, so you can take this child, it's okay. Then Narada Muni appears on the scene, tells Kamsa, no, what are you doing? Yeah, you don't know, these demigods are so crooked. You know, the voice from the sky, one of the acharyas says, this voice from the sky was actually one of the demigods. So Narada Muni spoke to Kamsa. So we don't get much about what he said here. In fact, we don't really get anything. We just have an idea that he said that the Yadu dynasty, members of the Yadu dynasty were demigods, and any children born from the womb of Devaki might be Vishnu. So I was trying to find a reference to this conversation in other places, and I found something, a couple of things. This first thing, I'll read this. This is from the Harivamsa. The Harivamsa is considered like the an addendum to the Mahabharata. At the end of the Mahabharata, there's a summary of Krishna's pastimes and other things too. Sort of like a summarized Srimad Bhagavatam even. So it has Krishna's Leela in there. And so this is from that. Now this, I just took this translation off the internet, but it seems all right. So well, it has the Sanskrit here too, so I could check a few things to see. It makes sense. It seems to be good translation. So I'll read this. So what has happened is that Narada Muni is speaking at this point. This is from the Gargasam. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. Is this the one? Yeah, this is from the Harivamsa. I'm sorry. The Garga Samhita comes. I'll read something from that also. So this is from the Harivamsa. So Narada is speaking to Kamsa. He says that I was traveling around as I do, and I was in the assembly of the demigods. I think it was in Brahmaloka. Brahma was there, so it was probably in Brahmaloka. So the demigods, there was a discussion going on. So now he's reporting. He says, in the assembly, I heard that the devas were confidentially discussing terrible methods for killing you and your associates. Kamsa, according to what I heard from there, the eighth son who will be born to your younger sister Devaki in Mathura will be the cause of your death. He will be the protector of the devas and the shelter of heavenly bodies. He, the supreme secret of the devas, will be the cause of your death. So here we get an idea that maybe Kamsa's figuring this out. Oh, this is Vishnu. Huh? He's the protector of the devas and the shelter of the heavenly bodies. He is the object of the devas' liberation and enjoyment. He is the self-manifested Brahma for devas. That is why I say that he is the great divine truth. Of course, we also know that Kamsa probably knows who Narada is, great devotee of Lord Vishnu. So here he gets the idea who he's talking about. Kamsa, this venerable person, was the cause of your death in the past. So Prabhupada makes a mention here that in this purport, second purport, that Narada told Kamsa he had been Kalanami in the past and had been killed by Lord Vishnu. Remember him and try to destroy Devaki's conception. I am pleased with you. That is why I came here to inform you. Enjoy all pleasures. I wish you well. I am leaving now. Saying this, Narada left. Afterwards, thinking about his words, Kamsa started laughing loudly, showing his teeth. This reminds me, in the nectar devotion, there are different kinds of smiles, right, and the laughter. So one when you show your teeth, atihasa, and the different kinds of hasa. So one of them is when you show your teeth. He stood before his servant, smiling, and said, "This Narada is a laughingstock for all. He is not intelligent. He is not intelligent. Even when I am sitting or sleeping or careless or intoxicated, devas along with Vasava, Indra, are unable to frighten me. I can shake the entire earth with my two strong arms. Who is there in the human world who can trouble me? From today I will start oppressing the devas and those who obey them, men, birds, and animals. Order Keshi, the horse, Pralamba, Denuka, Arishta, Putana, and Kalia, that they can roam on earth in whatever form they like. They can strike all those who speak ill of our side. Find out the status of those who are conceived in the womb." Narada said that our fear is from a conception. "Enjoy as you wish to the full extent without any worry. As long as you are under my protection, there is nothing to fear from devas. This Brahmin, Narada, always tries to create quarrels between people. He loves to create differences among people who are otherwise living in harmony. He is restless and always travels around inducing quarrels. He takes pleasure in causing fights between kings by various ways and means." After prattling valiantly like this, Kamsa went to his home. His mind was burning in the fire of thoughts. So that's the end of that chapter. It's the second chapter of the Vishnu Parva of the Hari Vamsa. This and now I also have just a few verses from the Garga Samhita. Here Narada is again speaking. I'm not sure who he's speaking to. This translation, I believe, is by Kusha Kreta. So he says to, or Narada says to Kamsa, "O King of Kings, all the Vasus have become the people who have Nanda as their leader." So here he's explaining what I just read. It said that the devas are taking birth in the Yadu dynasty. So we get some elaboration on that here. Narada's breaking it up a little bit. All the Vasus have become the people who have Nanda as their leader. The Suras have become the people who have Vrishabhanu as their leader. A group that has the Vedic hymns as its leader has become gopis. They are all now on the earth. The devas have become the Vrishnis, headed by Vasudev, and all the demigoddesses have become their wives, headed by Devaki. Now here's how he convinces Kamsa that he has to worry now, even though it's not the eighth pregnancy yet. "Depending on how they are counted, any of Vasudev's sons can be the eighth one. Any of them can be the one who will kill you. That is the crookedness of the demigods." So one of the acharyas, I think it's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he comments on this. And he says that, he's telling Kamsa that, just like you heard this voice from the sky, but you know, it was one of the demigods, and they're so crooked, they may speak in certain ways and twist things around. So when this voice said the eighth son, well, who knows? When you make a list of eight, you can put it in any order that you want. So maybe the first one is actually the eighth one according to their crooked way of counting. So you better be scared of these crooked demigods. That was the way that Narada was talking to Kamsa. So Kamsa, as I was reading before from the Hari Vamsa, we see how he reacted. Because he's a demon, we're hearing here also in the first verse that we read today, about how these demons, they're willing to kill anyone. Mataram, Pitaram, Bratrim, Suridas. So especially four kinds of persons are mentioned here. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says these are listed in order of importance or the heinousness of the activity. So the worst thing is to kill Mataram, your mother. Then Pitaram, the father. then bratrin, the brothers, and then the friends. So the demons will kill any of those. So we hear, of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna devotes a whole chapter, pretty much most of the 16th chapter. It's called the Divine and Demoniac Natures, but most of it is about the demoniac nature. So I wanted to look at that. We'll get a clear understanding. There was some discussion last time I gave a class about, you know, what do we consider an evil person. And actually, I just said, does Prabhupada use that word a lot? I used it in class, and I was thinking, does Prabhupada call evil? And then I looked on the, I just did a quick search on the Vedabase, and there were 1,300 hits for evil. So Prabhupada definitely uses the word evil. Evil influences, evil persons, evil planets, good and evil. He seems to use it even in the, we would say good and bad, Prabhupada would say good and evil. In the Bhagavad Gita, we hear how one can take birth among good and evil species. So evil or asura or demoniac, these all basically mean the same thing, demoniac nature. So in the 16th chapter, Krishna devotes quite a few verses to helping us understand demoniac persons. Now, one thing I noticed here is that there are some things that you might say are very general. For anyone, for example, anyone who's not a devotee of Krishna is a demon. But then we hear other characteristics where it sounds like very powerful, wealthy persons who think they can do anything, they're called the demons. So we get both of them. Now, actually, I was thinking devotees sometimes say that that it says that in Kali Yuga, you know, in different ages, demons are in different places, and in Kali Yuga, the demons and devotees are in the same body. Well, I searched for that, and I can't find a reference to that. So I don't know. That's a little questionable reference. I'd like to see that in writing somewhere, because I don't know where that comes from. I couldn't find it in the Vedabase. So Krishna begins with the in the fourth verse. First, there's a whole list of divine qualities. Then he starts in text 4 with demoniac qualities. Pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness, and ignorance. These qualities belong to those of demoniac nature, oprita. The next verse is quite nice. Daivi sampad vimokshaya nibbanda dhyasuri mata. The transcendental qualities are conducive to liberation, whereas the demoniac qualities make for bondage. Then he says, ma shuchaha, don't worry. Sampadam daivam abhijatu sipandava. Don't worry, O son of Pandu, for you are born with divine qualities. So then he says there are two kinds of persons, the divine and the demoniac, and then we get into a whole list of the demoniac. Those who are demoniac do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Neither cleanliness nor proper behavior nor truth is found in them. They say that this world is unreal with no foundation and no God in control. They say it is produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lusts. Following such conclusions, the demoniac who are lost to themselves and who have no intelligence engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. Taking shelter of insatiable lust and absorbed in the conceit of pride and false prestige, the demoniac thus illusioned are always sworn to unclean work, attracted by the impermanent. They believe that to gratify the senses is the prime necessity of human civilization. Thus, until the end of life, their anxiety is immeasurable, bound by a network of hundreds of thousands of desires and absorbed in lust and anger. They secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. The demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him. And my other enemies will also be killed. I am the lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform activities, I shall give some charity, and I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. Doesn't it just sound like a person gets all heated up and goes on and starts ranting? Nice way that Lord Krishna has portrayed it here. Thus perplexed by various anxieties and bound by a network of illusions, they become they become too strongly attached to sense enjoyment and fall down into hell. Such self-complacent and always impudent, deluded by wealth and false prestige, they sometimes proudly perform sacrifices in name only, without following any rules and regulations. Bewildered by false ego, strength, pride, lust, and anger, the demons become envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in their own bodies and in the bodies of others, and blaspheme against the real religion. So that's basically the description of their characteristics. And then Krishna says, so I cast them down among demoniac species. There's one I wanted to mention in one purport. Though there, in purports, Prabhupada points out, of course, he elaborates on these different things. As I mentioned, one of the things he says, how they're, especially if they're rich and powerful and they think they can do anything. But he says here, this is in the purport to text number 6. One should perform duties in light of authoritative scripture. This mentality is called divine. One who does not follow the regulative principles as they are laid down in the scriptures and who acts according to his whims is called demoniac or asuric. There is no other criterion but obedience to the regulative principles of scriptures. So here Prabhupada draws this line. Of course, I think we have to be a little bit careful of Prabhupada's. Sometimes he uses these superlative statements of every and all and only and things like that. And you find someplace else, something else is mentioned. So I think we have to take those sometimes as just for emphasis. So this is certainly a very strong consideration. Or we can say, in one sense, anyone who is against regulative principles, or whose life is not guided by the Vedic scriptures, is considered asuric, or not a Krishna bhakta, Vishnu bhakta smito daiva, not a deva, not a pious person, but an impious person. So Kamsa, of course, is the emblem of such a person. We see how wicked he was, ready to kill children. But because he knew something about Krishna, so here in the first purport that I read, Prabhupada is pointing out, just imagine, or he's implying, how powerful it is to know something about Krishna. Kamsa knew that Vishnu couldn't be killed. So just for that, he attained liberation. At least that's the way Prabhupada presents it here in this purport. So just imagine how powerful it is to know something about Krishna. Ye Krishna tattva veta se guru hoy. Whereas Krishna tattva, Prabhupada has explained, this is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says, one can be a guru if one knows Krishna tattva. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, if you know me tattvata, in truth, then you can go back to Godhead. When you leave this body, you go home, back to Godhead. So it doesn't just mean that you know Krishna and you know him as some historical personality, or you're from India, so every other shop is Krishna's shop, Krishna this shop or that. I saw yesterday that the U.S. Navy used to have a ship called Krishna back in the 40s or something. I think they had one called Indra too. So, yeah, some sailors were serving aboard the Krishna. That's pretty nice. So maybe they didn't know anything about Krishna. Of course, they were chanting Krishna's holy name, so they certainly some benefit. But Krishna tattvata, knowing Krishna tattvata, means that you have to know who Krishna is. You have to know Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, of course, that's what we're doing. We're trying to... It's like you can know about Krishna, and you can know Krishna. So we're trying to know Krishna, actually know him. And that comes with purification of the heart, and that's what Srimad Bhagavatam does. It purifies our hearts so we can really know Krishna through our study of Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'll read the translations again. Kings greedy for sense gratification on this earth almost always kill their enemies indiscriminately. To satisfy their own whims, they may kill anyone, even their mothers, fathers, brothers, or friends. In his previous verse, Kamsa had been a great demon named Kalanemi and had been killed by Vishnu. Upon learning this information from Narada, Kamsa became envious of everyone connected with the Yadu dynasty. Any questions or comments, Dharmaraj?
This may not be a philosophical question, but I was just wondering, it explains that the demons, they would kill even their mothers, fathers, brothers, and friends. And in this case, we're talking about Kamsa and his sister, Devaki. So just wondering if there's any particular reason why a sister wasn't mentioned there.
Well, this is Sanskrit poetry, so it probably didn't work in the meter. Actually, it said, what was the word? There was a word there that said, and others, the cha, sarva, sarvan cha, and anyone else. So that included anyone else. But this list was here, didn't it? Bratrin, so swasrin, you could say, would certainly be included in the list. And this verse is specifically about kings. Kings have that power. We read later, or not later, in the seventh canto, it talks about how is it the husbands who are too attached to their wives will kill even their family members? I think that's what it is. So even ordinary persons, not just kings, are also, sometimes it's pointed out that they will kill their family members. Pushkar Prabhu?
A couple times it was mentioned that Kamsa, he wanted to kill Krishna, though he also knew that Vishnu couldn't be killed. But isn't it that he didn't really connect the dots that Krishna is Vishnu? He just thought, this is some weird kid who's going to kill me. He wasn't thinking that he was Vishnu, right? I mean, isn't...
Well, there are several times where Prabhupada mentions that he knew that Vishnu was the person who was coming to kill him. So somehow he figured out that that was Krishna.
Or, because he's a rascal, he figured that a lot of people want to kill him anyway. Krishna and Vishnu are just some of them.
Yeah, well, that was the question. Why would he send demons to kill him if he knew he couldn't be killed? Well, because these demons can't think straight. They have no intelligence. That was one of the characteristics we were reading in the 16th chapter. Krishna Gopal Guru?
Down the road, and a couple more verses down the road, this is explained that the asuras are covered over by Mahamaya. And so even though Kamsa, whatever he knew, it didn't matter. He'll just, Mahamaya is so strong that she just covers you over.
Yeah.
And therefore, okay, yeah, I'll try to kill him again.
Even in ordinary life, you see sometimes their poles are taken on different things. And you'll see that people hold completely contradictory views, you know, depending on how the question is asked and so on. So that's not unusual for people to think about in two different things that are completely opposite and accept them both. So that's Maya takes away our intelligence. Yeah.
Hi Krishna Prabhu, very nice class. You were explaining how Srila Prabhupada said demons born in devotees' family are in different planets. And you didn't really know how to explain it. I was wondering, like, even in our devotee family, we'll see, like, really nice devotee family, and the kids, they turn out, you know, different, you know, not submissive, or do all kinds of wrong things. Mm. And I get baffled sometimes because I have kids growing up, and I have to explain to them, and I don't know how to explain. Can you explain a little?
We see devotees, actually we see it both ways. Just like today is Vamana's appearance day, I was thinking, well, Bali Maharaj, he's on the Asura side. The whole pastime of Vamana Dev takes place because Bali Maharaj and the demons had taken over the heavenly planets. So and it happens throughout history. Prahlad, of course, he was also born in the Vaniak family, and we see it the other way. So why this happens? Well, it's Krishna's arrangement. Who knows why Krishna does things? And we know, of course, nothing is guaranteed. You can take birth in a good family as a result of your pious activities or your devotional service in the past. Probably to point to Vaishnava children and say, don't think these are ordinary children. They have practiced in their past. You can see how easily they take to these things and so on. But free will is there. This is Kali Yuga, especially that the influence of Kali Yuga is so strong that then nothing is guaranteed. They may even be pious souls, but the influence of the age is so powerful. We live in such contaminated atmosphere. The influence is everywhere. So we have to do our best, but ultimately it's up to that person. You know, we can't explain a person's karma. We can't explain, you know, the free will is always there. And there are many, many factors that go into what happens in a person's life and what a person does and so on.
So we have demons and we have devotees. So if a devotee acts in a non-devotional way, do they automatically now become a demon? Or what is this? What is the nature?
Yeah, well, that's the whole question of, you know, who's a devotee and who's a demon. Just like as I was reading, well, some of these things don't seem to apply to everyone. In fact, we see people that we would, if they don't follow the scriptures, they're categorized as demons, according to Prabhupada's purport. As he said, it's the only criteria. So that I said, we'd have to say sometimes, well, in a sense. So I would say that no, they're not demons. They're acting, they're doing demoniac things, non-pious things, sinful things. But, of course, ultimately, we're all devotees. We're all devotees of Krishna eternally. So we find ourselves in situations, and maybe if you align yourselves with that camp, then you pick up yourself with that camp, then you pick up the name, you pick up that label. So in one sense, you can say that dual bhuta sargal, there's two sides. You know, so you have to pick your side. So if you go over to this side temporarily, then you're on the blue team. And then if you go on this side, you're on the red team. So that's what happens. You get called by that name if you start acting that way. Steve, did he?
Yeah, sometimes maybe it's a Western thing. We think of, this is just one angle. We think of demons and devotees. It's sort of like this essential quality of the self, like there's, God's people and then the evil people who are with Satan and some sort of eternal essential quality. But like you just said, actually this is all just some, even for the most asuric, potentially they are, essentially they are pious, jivas. They have some eternal sarup, but they're just they're lost unto themselves. They're in some intense, insane condition. It's like a psychology. So I guess, so in one sense, sometimes we use asura and deva, like it's like a race or it's a nation or ethnic category. But other times, sometimes we use it, it's like a psychological condition almost, it sounds like. I was wondering if you might want to expound on that or comment on it.
Well, that's why I say there's different ways of looking at it. You know, you talk about race, so certainly those who, study Hinduism, they tend to see things that way. And we even see it come up in the Bhagavatam, of course. We have the Asuras and the Devas. They're always fighting with each other. So there are these two categories of beings that live in the higher planets or the lower planets, and they fight with each other. So it is almost like a feud, an eternal feud that goes on between two families. So that aspect of it is certainly there. But there's also that, people are, just like I didn't read the next verse here, but Krishna says, those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among men, I perpetually cast into the ocean of material existence into various demoniac species of life. Attaining repeated birth among the species of demoniac life, such persons can never approach me. Gradually they sink down to the most abominable type of existence. So this is pretty heavy language. So it makes it sound as if there are people who are just rotten to the core, and it's going to take a really long time for them to become purified. They'll have to get agyata sukriti. Somehow or other, they'll have to make contact with the pious element or the spiritual element or transcendence, really, Krishna consciousness. By Krishna's arrangement, That's always a question. Why does Krishna give a Gyatu Sukriti? But somehow that tendency that they have, that hardness of heart and enviousness of Krishna, it becomes ameliorated, becomes softened somewhat, lessened somewhat by contact with devotional service, and gradually we know that because the soul is eternally servant of Krishna, they can awaken. But it seems like, from Krishna's description here, that one can spend a very, very long time in the devaniac mentality and spend a very long time in material existence as a result of it. So we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.